I'm Callie Crossley. This is the Callie Crossley. No, it isn't. This is Boston Public Radio. Anyone who's been paying attention to the presidential race probably knows that Mitt Romney went on a road trip with his dog strapped to the roof of his car. President Obama ate an ice cream cone with a spoon, and both of them are blaming each other for outsourcing jobs. And one candidate, you choose who is better equipped than the other to turn this economy around. But one thing we seldom hear about is Afghanistan and the consequences of this war, which has gone on for 11 years. Linda Bilmez, you've written a lot. You've been tracking the cost of this war a lot, both in books and articles. Last Sunday, you wrote an editorial about how Afghanistan is almost non-existent when it comes to this presidential race. Why is nobody talking about it?
Well, the reason nobody is talking about it is that it's a very, very unpleasant topic. We actually are in the middle of a pretty ghastly situation, and things are getting worse over the past couple of years and not better. We have lost already some thousands of young men and women, Americans and our allies. We are spending billions of dollars every single week on this war. We still have 100,000 U.S. troops stationed in Afghanistan. And I think that when you pick up the newspaper every single day, you see the legacy of what is going on there in terms of the killings and terrible quality of life for Afghan civilians, as well as the loss to our own economy and our own troops.
Your book, The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict, tracked the cost of that war. It's pretty startling statistics in that. Give us a sense when you say billions and thousands dying and, you know, some more concrete details about what the grim statistics look like with regard to Afghanistan.
Well, there are human costs and there are budgetary costs. The human costs are that we have already lost more than 2,000 young Americans. We have lost 422 British troops and 600 troops from the coalition, mostly Canadians and French and so forth. We have already lost several thousand Afghan police and military. We have tens of thousands of our young people who are injured, who are coming back as veterans. And as a sort of rule of thumb, there are about eight of our troops who are injured for every fatality. We have, as well, about half of the veterans who are serving in Afghanistan coming back with mental and physical disabilities. This is an enormous number of young Americans who are coming back changed for the rest of their lives, in most cases, for them and their families. That's a kind of human cost, and that, of course, has a connection to the economic and budgetary costs, because one of the costs of the war is that we will be taking care of these veterans for the rest of their lives, adding trillions of dollars to our budgetary costs over the many years. In addition, if you just look at, it's very hard to get your mind around how big these numbers are, but for an example, we're spending $200 billion in Afghanistan this year. That means we're spending $6,000 for every man, woman, child in Afghanistan. And I think that people would not begrudge spending that much money if they felt that we were making things better, or that we were making things less violent, or that we were winning. But what is most disturbing is that that is obviously not the case. And that leads to the next question, the bigger question, which is, what is the purpose of the war at this point? We have been there for 11 years. We went in 11 years ago to remove al-Qaeda bases and to capture bin Laden, both of which have been accomplished. So the question is, now that these goals have been achieved, does it make sense to stay there for another couple of years with another 70,000 troops, given the situation in Afghanistan? And I think that anyone who looks at history will see that Afghanistan, for the past 3,000 years, has been, as they call it, the graveyard of empires. Whether it's the Russians, the British, the Greeks, the Romans, the Huns, the Mongols, the Mughals, the Persians, the Turkmens, all of them went into Afghanistan. None of them succeeded. And the pattern has been historically the same, that the invading force got bogged down in Afghanistan, which is a tribal society with tribal customs and feuds, and lost huge amounts of blood and treasure.
So we can understand why there might be, as you have described it, a conspiracy of silence between the two candidates. Here's what we know even today, new poll out that both of them, President Obama and Mitt Romney, are in a dead heat. So obviously nobody wants to tip the balance in favor of his opponent. But from the facts and figures that you've just given us, it is incredibly important that the American people know, you know, what their taxpayer money is going to fund at this point. And the bigger issue that you raise that I think a lot of people don't think about, and we think about, yes, it has an impact on our economy. You've made that quite clear. But it's also a security issue.
Well, it is a security issue and it's a budgetary issue. Right now, we are in the middle of a war and no one is discussing the implications of the war and whether it is worth our international strategic capital as well as our money to continue in this policy. President Obama has a policy that he has put forward, which is to withdraw the additional troops that were put in, the 30,000 that he put in a surge which did not work, over the next couple of years, leaving an unspecified number to continue for a while and giving long-term aid in the billions of dollars a year to Afghanistan. Governor Romney has said that he wants to take, quote, a harder line and that this is not, quote, the time to cut and run. He has not said anything about what that means. Does that mean he wants to stay longer? Does that mean he wants to put in more troops? He has absolutely been unwilling to specify what it is that he means. However, he has already cost the United States a significant amount of money this year by complicating the president's efforts to deal with the fallout after the United States mistakenly killed 24 Pakistani soldiers last November. Pakistan asked for an apology, and because Governor Romney said that he would never apologize under any circumstances to anyone for anything we did, it was very complicated for the United States to negotiate this apology, which finally came last week. During the interim 7 months, we had to travel 10 times the distance to supply our troops, endangering our 100,000 troops there and adding hundreds of millions of dollars in cost every month to take every single supply that we get into Afghanistan around a 10-day circuitous troop route through the mountains in Uzbekistan.
So here we are. They've sort of talked about it a little bit a long time ago, but I honestly, and I read your piece, I was thinking, no, you know, I really haven't heard them say a word about this war, which is so significant for all of us, really, because we have to factor that in our budget. But in point of fact, and in fairness, if you can apply that here, they're not really talking about anything. I mean, any subject matter of substance. I actually heard a couple of pundits just this week refer to the kind of exchange that they're having on the campaign trail as Seinfeldian, which is a reference to the Seinfeld comedy series that had a plot where George and Jerry, the characters, were trying to sell a TV plot about nothing. And so they said, this is what this campaign has become. It's about nothing. So if you can't even get them to talk about stuff at home, for lack of a bit, I mean, I know that sounds parochial, but How are they going to go far afield and talk about something that is this grim, really, is the only word to use?
Well, I think the public and the media have a responsibility to be demanding that Afghanistan, which is a 11-year-old war that we are right in the middle of, be a central issue in this campaign for two reasons. First of all, there is the fact that we are in a war and we are endangering our young people. But secondly, the amount of money that we're spending in Afghanistan is $200 billion this year. That is a significant amount of money in terms of the impact on our economy. And that money, as Joe Stiglitz and I showed in our book, The $3 Trillion War, is not benefiting the U.S. economy. This is money that primarily goes to purchase fuel. It is primarily going to transport fuel to remote outposts. It's primarily being spent as well on the transportation cost to local contractors. And very, very little of this comes back to the U.S. economy.
Now, let me just be clear. So this fuel is helping troops get to where they need to go to fight in various battles?
This is fuel basically for supplies, getting supplies and to set up forward operating bases in very remote areas in a very mountainous, very rural area where we are essentially paying for our troops to be stationed, to be clearing landmines, to try and hold areas, to be training local troops. A significant amount of the money is going to fund the Afghan military and police, although so far the Afghan military and police, in addition to the fact that at least 25 times in the past year they have turned on Americans and coalition members and been in what are called a green-on-blue incidents, but they also have not proved capable to protect their own civilian population. So it's completely unclear whether this money has been well spent even within the context of Afghanistan. And as Anthony Cordesman, my colleague at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says, the system virtually invited waste, fraud, and abuse. The way we have spent the money has been very, very poor. But in addition, you have the fundamental fact that we are borrowing this $200 billion a year, mostly from China, and we are spending it in Afghanistan, mostly to purchase Middle Eastern oil.
Pause right there, because that's a lot to take in. So this, it's taxpayer money, but we're borrowing the money to pay for this.
We are borrowing 100% of the money to pay for this. Mm. So you, Callie, have already borrowed $1,750 this year from mostly from China in order to pay for this war.
Wow. Well, that leaves us in another kind of economic / political pickle, because we got issues with China as well. So we're in debt to China for many other things, but we're in debt to them for funding a war about which nobody's talking.
I think what I think the issue that it really raises is that this is increasing our national debt. This amount of money, $200 billion that we're borrowing every year to finance the operations in Afghanistan, could arguably be spent in deficit reduction. It could be spent in aid to state and local governments. It could be spent in middle class tax cuts. All three, any three of those or any combination of those three would benefit our economy. It is unclear, and certainly neither of the candidates have made any kind of explanation of why this $200 billion a year being spent that is borrowed money in Afghanistan is benefiting our economy, even though they are talking about the economy all the time.
Is it possible for you to tease out, for example, the one thing that you just mentioned, which I'm sure a lot of folks in state government ears would perk up? And that is, I mean, in everywhere, including Massachusetts, all these cutbacks and very good programs, needed programs that need support, had to go because the budgets are, I mean, the states cannot afford it. So how much would be back in the coffers of, let's say, a Massachusetts if, you know, if this wasn't going out every day and we weren't borrowing up to our necks to pay for this?
You know, I first got interested in studying war costs because I work a lot in the local community and I see the value of a dollar in a local community. $6 in Somerville pays for after-school basketball for a teenager. And as the mother of three teenagers, I know how important after-school sports are. Tiny bits of money are being cut all over the country in state and local governments. We know that state and local governments are the best way to employ people. They're the best way to get the economy moving. And they tend to employ jobs of people who are close to our citizens, whether it's teachers or firemen or librarians in the schools. $200 billion, which is the amount we're going to be spending in Afghanistan this year, could make a significant impact on the lives of children and ordinary residents around the country. There's no question about that.
I'm talking with Linda Bilmes. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard University. She's the co-author of The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict. And recently, she wrote an editorial about how Afghanistan as a subject and our involvement in it as a nation has not been a subject. In fact, she calls it a conspiracy of silence between the two presidential candidates, President Obama and Mitt Romney. No conversation at all. So you say voters should be really worried about this. Obviously, as you've laid out the case, we should be. But what are the questions we should ask or should have our representatives ask for us? Just the hard ones to these candidates.
I think we should be asking whether the policy of continuing to leave 68,000 American troops in Afghanistan through the end of 2014, so for another 2 years, is wise, and what we would be accomplishing by pursuing this. Because if the end game is some kind of a deal with the Taliban, which is what experts have long said it is, the situation is not going well. The idea was that we were going to be staying there so that we could be in a position of strength vis-a-vis the Taliban. In fact, things have been going badly, so we are the Taliban is becoming stronger and we are becoming weaker, so they are the ones gaining a position of strength. So we really have to take a clear-eyed view about whether our strategy of continuing to keep U.S. troops there is working. A second issue is whether we should be allocating this money in this way, in this war, and whether that is in the U.S. national security interest. A third issue is the issue of long-term ongoing funding for Afghanistan. There was last week, 2 weeks ago in Tokyo, a 70-country donors conference, the second one in 6 months, about figuring out long-term payments to Afghanistan. Now, Afghanistan, as we all know, is riddled with corruption. Some of the largest contracts have gone to members of the Karzai government. The one thing that people in Afghanistan seem to be united on is a desire for foreign troops to leave. And yet we have put so much money into the economy there that the World Bank and others have said that the whole country would collapse if we pull out. Therefore, we are pledging billions of dollars a year over the next decade at least to help prop up the economy and this government. And I think we need to be asking whether that is wise policy, whether that is a wise use of funding, and whether that is a wise long-term commitment.
And in fact, you make the point, aside from those wounded soldiers that are coming home, they're going to need long-term care for years, that even if we were to pull out right now, the costs of this war would continue going up for a while. We'd still have a lot of costs to deal with.
Well, one thing that we know is that the cost of caring for veterans peaks many, many years after the last shot is fired. The cost, even for World War I, for caring for veterans, for World War I, did not peak until 1969. The World War II cost did not peak until the mid-1980s, and Vietnam costs have not yet peaked. Now, we will this year actually cross the point where we are spending more money on care for our veterans than we do in salaries for our active duty troops, which is an extraordinary kind of threshold. We have a much higher number of troops who are coming back with disabilities this time than we ever have before, several times higher. We have, for example, the average troop coming back with 8 or 9 different disabling conditions, all kinds of things wrong with them. We have not put aside any money in what I have called for, which is a veterans trust fund, to care for these veterans over their lives. We have simply allocated the money for war. And one use, for example, for this $200 billion, you know, would be to set up a veterans trust fund so that we do not have essentially another unfunded entitlement program, which is what we are accruing with the unpaid for money for caring for veterans of these wars.
That's my guest, Linda Bilmes. And the question is, will the questions be asked of the presidential candidates and will they answer? Thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Thank you
this.
So much.
We've been talking about the costs and consequence of the war in Afghanistan and why no one from Mitt Romney to President Obama to the media are going near it. I've been speaking with Linda Bilmes. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard University and co-author of The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict. Kara Miller's here in Studio 3, which means it's time to talk about innovation.
Yeah, that's right, Kelly. In this heat, in the heat we've been having in the past few days, I think the last thing anyone would really want is to wear a three-piece suit. Unless you buy your clothes from a new local company. So you've got some MIT grads who've engineered dress shirts that can actually keep you cool.
Well, Kara, sounds like you're being very fashion forward today.
We are, and that's just one of the many fashion inventions that we'll be talking about. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Boston Public Radio.